Okay, let's start. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. We're going to get through this, guys. Trust me. We're going to get through this deal. It's probably the worst six-step meeting I've ever done in my entire life, but it's going to be the best one I can do right now, which is the only requirement. I haven't had a drink for a while, as you all, quite a while. And you can tell by looking at me, you know, with the cane and everything, I've been somewhere for quite a while. And it's good to be here. I see a lot of friends, a lot of people I know, you know, previously. And, well, it's good to see Callie here. Well, she's wonderful. She's one of the sickest women I know. Which puts her, I put her right up there on the pedestal. You know what I mean? She's great. She really is great. Sasha and different people here that I've known for a long time. And we're on step six. You know, it's not like I didn't have your guys' number to start off with. You know what I mean? But step six. Give me a break. I'm looking at this crowd. This is a Viagra crowd if I ever saw it. Who are you kidding? Give me a break, you know? Okay, so we'll talk about a lot of stuff. So we're going to talk about a lot of stuff now. We're going to have a little fun. I don't think anybody will drink for the next hour, and I'm going to talk a little bit of alcoholism. And as I said, I haven't found necessarily to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, so I've been around for a while. I'm just basically going to share my experience. As they say, my experience, strength, and hope. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, to be asked to do this. I do this a lot. I've been very fortunate to be able to do this. And I'm very grateful to be able to share with alcoholics. I enjoy doing it. And what I truly try to do is talk about what I know, you know, instead of talking outside my experience. And, of course, when you've been around for, what, it's 32 years, you know, you've experienced a lot of stuff, you know. The more stuff, the more bounce checks, the more broken relationships, the more, I can't believe this crap is happening to me, the more, who the hell do they think they're dealing with, you know, and you know, I'll show them, you know, if only, yes, but the more stuff you deal with over your life, and, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you're always dealing with stuff because the world revolves around you. I probably should have made that announcement about the phones, don't you think?
You did.
I know, I said it a couple of times, but this is a very serious disease in many aspects. We're going to talk about the disease of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you got to take things with a grain of salt, you know, when you're talking to alcoholics. It's like talking to three-year-olds. This particular group is accepted. I mean, I can tell that you guys are, without question, a higher class, a more intelligent, you know, group of alcoholics. Probably one of the most intelligent group of alcoholics I've ever seen. And I'm just going to talk about my experience. My sponsor once told me, when the man with experience meets the man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. So I may not know much. As a matter of fact, that is the truth. That's the sad truth. Isn't that sad? You read this book called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to read a little from the book. So at least you read this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you say, yeah, this is really great. And you get to the very end, and these guys who wrote the book says, we know but a little. And these are guys, you're basing your life on these guys, and you get to the end of the book, and they say, we don't know crap. And these are the guys you're following, you know? That's got to be tough for an alcoholic when you walk in here and you know everything. You know everything, about everything, and you're so sure and you're so right. You're so right that if anybody disagrees with you, they got to die because they're so stupid. And you read this book, and you're supposed to plan your life based upon some guys at the end of the book. The last thing they say, we don't know much. So your real reliance has to be on God. And that's what they're telling you. He's going to show you how to create the fellowship you crave, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. We know nothing. Throw everything on God. You know, pin your life utterly on Him. And you don't even believe in God. Now they've really got you lost, you know. And you know, one of the great things about staying sober for these things really have to be practiced. I mean, it's one thing to try to, if you try to intellectually put these things together, you're going to miss the boat. The good thing is most alcoholics are alive, not all of them, but most of them, and they're breathing and they're experiencing life. So drunk, sober, in AA or out AA, they're going to get the bounce checks, they're going to get the cancer, they're going to get the people dying on them, they're going to get the bad things happening to them, and the good things happening to them anyway. So everybody's going to get a chance to try this out, or not try it out, while they're growing older. You understand what I'm saying? So the truth is, it doesn't matter whether you want to believe in God or you don't want to believe in God. It doesn't really matter whether you want to do this stuff or whether you don't want to do this stuff. It really doesn't matter whether you believe in this or you don't believe in this. It really doesn't matter what your opinion is. You're going to get to grow old like me. You know, I've been doing this for 32 years and experiencing the workforce, unemployment, everything. And somewhere along the way, you're going to either be living a life of quiet desperation and become a thumb-sucking crybaby and be a total wuss, no matter how smart you are. And or you're going to run into people that seem to have their act together. And it's your life. You know, this ain't a dress rehearsal, right? You get to the end of your life, you're like 75, 80 years old. You say, yeah, you start realizing, say, holy shit, this wasn't a dress rehearsal. This was it. You know, it's not like I think, maybe I should have read the Bible and gone to that Bible. You know, that stupid guy, you know, I mean, I said, I'm spiritual, not religious. You know, maybe I should have, you know, done what the guys did during the first 4 years. You know, maybe I should have, you know, it'll be too late. It's like your life. What do you care what the guy in the first row thinks? This is your life. And then you start asking yourself questions. Why didn't I do that? Why was I such a smart ass? Why didn't I do this? And why didn't I do that? And why didn't I do this thing and that thing? And, it's too late because it's blown. The whole thing's blown. And you're alone. You're by yourself. Nobody's around. It's just you and the cancer, or you and the deal, or whatever it is, and you're living a life of quiet desperation, and, you know, and I hate to say it's never too late, but it becomes too late. It becomes the whole thing's gone. And it's all because of false pride. You know that. You know what Dr. Bob said? He said, if you are an atheist, agnostic, or have any other problem, he says, any other pride, false pride, that keeps you from what we talk about in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. So, man, I'll tell you, you got a lot of guys that say, I wish I was sponsored by the old-timers like the fountain. No, I don't think you do. Those guys were grabbing out of bed saying, get down on your knees, give your life to Jesus. You need to read Dr. Bob and the good old-timers. I don't think you do want to be sponsored by those guys. You know, because when they was young and when it was just starting out, they took this thing real seriously, which is why they say in the book, anybody can come in. Anybody can come in, no matter how far down they've gone, they'll be welcome as long as they mean business. Because they didn't have time to fool around. This was their lives, you know. Hey, now, you know, you can just about do anything, say anything. You can believe in the wisdom of the rooms. You can believe this book, but not believe this book. Go on your own. And, you know, it's so big, it's so large, you figure, you know, nothing's going to happen. We go along. And the bottom line is, you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, which is what happened during the first 4 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. What they did, you know that part in the book where it says, we read it all the time, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. In other words, you do what we did, you get what we got. Doesn't say you do whatever the hell you want to do, you get what we got. It says you do what we did, you'll get what we got. And then they write this book called The Big Book, which is a general synopsis, you know, written in such a way so it doesn't offend anybody, you know, written by a committee, you know what I mean? So it doesn't offend anybody, so they sort of like massaged it and everything, so they did the higher power, God, they took out some of the, you know, everything like that, because they didn't want, God forbid, anybody should be pissed off, because we know most alcoholics are codependent, too. All they do is sit around and think about what other people think about them. Except for this crowd. I can tell this crowd is pretty much stand on your own sort of thing. But if you're somebody like me, you know, who's an alcoholic in the extreme, my whole life is about what do they think about me, what am I going to say, why did I do that, what's going to happen. All you do is think about me, in terms of what people think about you and how they're going to think about you. You know, and you worry about stuff like that and waste 90% of your life worrying about crap, worrying about people that aren't even paying your Visa bills. You know, overcharging your credit card and spending more money buying stuff you don't need with money you don't have to impress people you don't even like, and then going to AA meetings and talk about how you got money problems and not understanding why you have money problems. It's all based upon what? Based upon the fact that you're scared that people are going to reject you. And you're worried that people aren't going to like you. And you want people to love you, and you don't want to be lonely, you know what I mean? And you think your problem is alcohol, and I've never been, I don't deal with alcohol. I don't even do alcohol. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I've been doing this thing for 32 years. I sponsored a lot of guys, you know what I mean? And none of them have alcohol problems. They all suffer from alcoholism. I mean, most people, I go to a lot of rooms. I've done a lot of meetings like this, and everybody's sober. Everybody's not sober. Everybody's not drinking. Nobody's had a drinking problem. I don't handle drinking problems. The cops handle drinking problems. Your kidneys and your liver will handle a drinking problem. Doctors handle drinking problems. You know. When you get here, you see there's two rules you got to understand about Alcoholics Anonymous. Number one, you need to drink in order to get here. It's really important. I really feel sorry for the guy that hasn't drank before he got here. You really need to drink. Drinking is important. I'm a big believer in drinking. You know, in the old days, there were big believers in drinking. So, you know, they'd say things like, we don't argue. You know, sometimes alcoholics will argue. You know, they argue. They say John Barleycorn is our business. We don't argue. John, you say, go out there and try a few drinks. So, you know, you got a drinking problem? Try it. You don't think it's so bad? Keep on drinking. Trust me, if you're an alcoholic, eventually you will come to the conclusion that your power is over alcohol. You will. It's progressive. It's chronic. I believe the book. Don't argue with them. Why argue with them? You're just going to drive yourself nuts. And even if you convince them, you convince somebody against their will that they're an alcoholic and they come here, you're just wasting your time because the first excuse they get, I don't like the way that guy talked, I don't like that guy Russell, he said the word Jesus, blah, blah, blah. The first any excuse, they're out there. Because they don't really believe they're drinking anyway. Just let them drink. The worst that happens, they're going to die. And, you know, alcoholics are about as common as dirt. I mean, you know, it's not like it's a big deal, you know what I mean? We're all over the place, you know? We're the ones that smash in the cars, kills families of five, and we walk away unscathed. So it's not like it's a big deal, you know? I mean, the bottom line is, don't waste your time. You know, you deal with the people that want this thing. This is for some of the people that want it, not, you know, for people who need it. Everybody needs this thing, you know? And, you know, that's just my stupid philosophy. So, whatever. I got the chair now, so you get to come up here when they ask you to do the steps. That's after 32 years being on the phones and doing all this stuff and talking to alcoholics and working with alcoholics and wasting a lot of time trying to help alcoholics and explain to them that they should probably look at this thing differently and everything like that and realize, and I could have been helping people that really wanted help. Instead of being codependent and, you know, thinking that I had to cure the world and solve everybody's problems, and if somebody drank, it's my fault. Because, you know, alcoholics have an incredible genius for making you believe that you're responsible for them, you know? You know, I'm responsible to carry a message, not to carry the alcoholic. It says we tried to carry the message. It doesn't say we carry the message. We try. All I do is I'm doing the best job I can tonight, probably a crappy job, but it's the best you know, what happens to you and what you hear from my lips is going to be more dependent upon what's going on with you than it's dependent upon me. I'm not responsible for whether or not you stay sober, but I'm responsible for showing up and telling you what my experience is. And so that's the deal. So I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, this disease. It's a hell of a disease, isn't it? I told my sponsor, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you're sensitive. I told him, I said, I'm sensitive, because he used to hurt my feelings a lot. He would do things like tell me the truth and, you know. You know, I have a sign in my office. I'm a lawyer, so guys come into my office all the time under indictment or being sued or being, you know, the wives are kicking them out or, you know, stuff like that. And they all come in my office. They all got this story. Everybody's got a story, you know. You know, it sounds like this. It sounds like it's not my fault. I'm not to blame. I didn't do it. You don't understand. This is a bunch of crap, you know what I mean? Yeah, I did it, but I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for her, you know? They all got a story. It's this great, it's this long, drawn out. This is why I charge by the hour, because the stories are long, they're drawn out. They're long. You know, I can't even when you charge a lot of money by the hour, I can't take it. You know, any smart person would just sit there for 4 hours and let them say, and then my mother did this, and then, you know, they did that. And no, you got to know everything. You got to understand, you know, what the whole thing is, And, you know, you think I just sit there and let the clock run, but even I can't take it after a while, you know what I mean? After 50 minutes, I say, stop, I can't handle it anymore, you know what I mean? They ought to ship us, that's what they ought to do, for non-recovered alcoholics, just ship them down to Guantanamo, forget the waterboarding, just tell them your story, you know? Tell them your problems and what you're going through, and I can't take it, I'll confess, you know, and get this guy out of here, because they're all self-pityaholics. I was a self-pityaholic. Poor me. Nobody understands. And do you know if you're not, it says men and women. Did you know the book says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol? Did you know it says that? That we drink because we like the effect? I'm not talking about you guys. You guys drank for the noble art of getting bombed because, you know, you're cosmopolitan or whatever else. But I drank for the effect produced by alcohol. I'd say the feeling is so elusive. Elusive. The sensation is so elusive they can't, after a time, separate the truth from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. The alcoholic life, you know what the alcoholic life is like? It's like you always feel a little bit off. You're not in the notch. You're a little bit off notch. You know what I mean? You know, there's something, you're not totally screwed on. It's like you haven't been totally, it's like the top hasn't been totally screwed on, it's loose. Somebody has to screw on the top, you know. You know, screw it on tight. You know, you take a couple of whacks, you know, and you screw on that top. And, well, it's like you're walking around and everything's sort of loose, and then you have to take a couple of drinks, and somebody puts a giant screwdriver in your back and sort of like tightens things, everything's up, and like you're together now, you know? And it's like, so alcohol, you know, being an alcoholic is you're just a little bit off, but you see, it says our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. In other words, it says we're restless, irritable, and discontented unless we can again experience. This is my opinion. You understand that? I'm not talking about my opinion. Now, it is my opinion now because I've lived it. I've known it. Any doubt about it has been beaten out over the last 32 years with the bounce checks and everything. I've come to believe this stuff. See, the truth of the matter is it is true. I really know but a little. I used to know everything about everything. And it was all wrong. We'll call those old ideas. But it didn't matter, it was wrong, because I knew I was right. And I have the chief characteristic of it. I didn't know this before. You know, I thought I was humble and great. And, you know, now I know that I'm defiant. You tell me to go left, I go right, because who the hell are you to tell me to go left? I'm going to go right anyway, you know. I'm going to go right just to show you that I can go right and screw you, you know. And the bottom line, so you see, for whatever reason, I don't even know I'm going right. I just feel like going right. Get out of my face, you know. And the bottom line is that I'm restless. I'm irritable, I'm discontented. You ready for this? That's sober. That's what sobriety feels like to an alcoholic. If you're an alcoholic, you are restless, irritable, and discontented unless you can get the car, unless you get the haircut, unless you can buy the blouse, unless you get sex, unless you get money, unless you have this. You are rest by yourself, sitting in the room, you are going to kill something. You know what I mean? You're going to kill something. You're over any period of time. It's all about why is this happening to me? I can't believe my life is like this. It's about being bored, about being restless, about being irritable, about being discontented. That's the real alcoholism. You want to see what alcoholism looks like? Stay sober. You don't even know what alcoholism is if you drink. Drinking clouds your idea of alcoholism, because if you drink, what happens is you start thinking what I think. You think alcoholism has to do with drinking. And it doesn't. It fools you. And so you think, this is what you think, if I could only stop drinking, everything will be okay. And then you stop drinking, you realize, whoa, what's this all about? You know, you're okay for a week or two, and then your brain starts going 50,000 miles an hour with 10 billion thoughts about yourself and other people, and they're all bad thoughts, and they make you uncomfortable, and, you know, it's a bad deal, bad day, you know? So, man, you got to really want to stay sober to get this thing, don't you? Because it's just crazy. Because, you know, it centers in your mind, not your body. That's what it said. Listen, don't blame me. Call from New York, say there's some guy reading the big book, and I don't like it. You know what I mean? And it says, that's what it says. It says the drinking is a symptom. People drink because they hate being sober. And they don't even know they hate being sober, because sober feels natural to them and normal, because their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So being off, being uncomfortable, being ill at ease, that you don't understand, you know, I can't believe this is happening to me, I'll show them, why is this happening? You know, always think, it's like the two psychiatrists pass themselves in the hall. One says hi, the other says, I wonder what he meant by that. You know, where the wrongdoings of others, fancy or real, have the power to actually kill. We're thinking about all sorts of crap that's happening to us or that's going to happen to us, and none of it is going to happen, and none of it is real, and most of it is illusory, you know, or just not even, you know, it's like my sponsor used to say, he said, Russ, 9 out of 10 things that are going to happen, or you think are going to happen, aren't going to happen, and one thing's going to happen, it's going to happen differently. Most of the stuff I think about is none of my business. Has absolutely nothing to do with me. And if you're an alcoholic, of course, your greatest hobby is talking shit about other people behind their back. Because you understand, if you're an alcoholic, you hate yourself. Now, you don't think you hate yourself because you love yourself. Because you think you're the greatest thing in the world, in between the times when you think you're the crappiest thing in the world. You know you think you're the crappiest thing in the world, because that's why when you're in the shower and you're lathering up, you hear, you know, those voices where you say, I'm a piece of crap, I wish I was dead, you know, I'll never be okay, I don't deserve anything, I'm stupid. I mean, you know, all those voices, you know, that, not you guys, because you guys are obviously cut above, you don't have that stuff, but, you know, if you come from where I come, you know all those voices, you know where they come from? You think they come from, like, Jupiter, right? They come from you! That's your opinion. When you hear voices telling you, condemning you and everything, that's your opinion about yourself, about you. That's you talking to you about what you think about yourself. So you got to understand, when you have, it doesn't matter how many times, like a boy was in the graveyard, you tell yourself you're great and you're fantastic and people don't understand. What you really think about you has to do with the voices you hear that come up from inside, which basically say you're a piece of shit and you wish you were dead and, you know, you don't deserve anything. And if you don't think that doesn't affect your thinking and your judgments and how you act with people and whether you're scared, you're crazy. which is why alcoholics are just in fear of people. They're stuck in fear of people. Now, I don't care if you used to drink at bars like me and you're always with people and so you think you love people. But, I mean, if you love people, why do you always have to get drunk when they're around them? Why, when you get sober and you're invited to a party, you're invited to here, you're worried about drinking because you're going to be around people? Because most alcoholics are scared of people. That's why they stay in the promises. Fear of people will leave you. They wouldn't say fear of people will leave you unless you weren't scared of people. But we don't know what alcoholism has to do with being anxious or scared of people. We think it has to do with drinking. It has nothing to do with drinking. The only thing drinking does is it's the best cure for alcoholism. That's why I drank, because no woman, no amount of money ever worked just as well as just a few drinks, and it works like that, right? You may have to go to 50 meetings to get the effect like one jigger of scotch gives you, you know, in 5 seconds, you know. Unfortunately for me, fortunately for me, alcohol doesn't work for me anymore. An unfortunate thing about my life is it stopped working about 10 years before I realized it stopped working, and it hurt a lot of people. So what I like to talk about in these rooms is old-timer stuff. When I say old-timers, it's kind of interesting. I have a heart for, you know, I sponsor guys that are 20 years and 25 years and 15 years and stuff like that. And I don't talk a lot about, you've pretty much heard what I'm going to say about alcohol now. I'm not going to talk a lot about drinking or alcohol or drink, that kind of stuff. I'm going to talk about the next frontier, emotional sobriety. My whole step series is usually geared towards emotional sobriety. Bill Wilson said that's the next frontier because that's the thing that I've been interested in. That's the thing I've been focused in. I've watched too many people that have 10 or 15 years that think they're doing okay, that are just thumb-sucking crybabies and end up drinking or drugging or doing stupid things and like divorcing wives and leaving kids and just doing other stupid things, which is just as much a basis for alcoholism as anything else because they're restless, they're discontented, so they're hurting people just the same way, they're just not doing it with alcohol in their breath. I've just dealt with too much bullshit, you know what I mean? You know, grown men that act like three-year-olds, you know what I mean, because they're chasing around their tail, and women acting like idiots, you know, and all that sort of stuff, chasing around for things. It may not look like alcohol. They may not be drunk. They probably pass a breathalyzer test, but as far as I'm concerned, they're not emotionally sober. They're drunk. There's too much of that going around. So, you know, that's what I'm going to talk about. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I got my problems. My deals do, but I'm going to talk about the emotional sobriety aspects of the next frontier. The interesting thing is although I talk about this stuff, which really doesn't have anything to do with drinking, well, it does have to do with drinking, because drinking's at the other end of not treating this deal, you know, what, even though I talk about this stuff, apparently, and I've been doing this enough around groups like this, the funny thing is an old-timer guy with 20 years will say, you know, you really helped me, this is the kind of stuff that's been bothering me, but a newcomer will get it to it. So apparently even newcomers recognize some of this stuff, you know, when it's brought out to them. So I want to get right to the heart of the matter. So let me, this is the sixth step. Did you know it's the step that separates the men from the boys? That's what it says. It separates the men from the boys. It says this is the step. I believe, based upon what I've seen, there's a separation that runs all the way through this deal. People are constantly separating themselves out, you know? And the separation comes to this point where I'll do this, but I won't do that. As soon as you say, I do this, but I won't do that, you've already separated yourself out. I'll go this far, but I won't go that far. You know, as soon as you decide that this is as far as you're, you know, what does it say? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, right? And it says, what it says, you ought to read the big book, you ought to read Dr. Bob, listen, if you're really serious about this thing, read Dr. Bob and the Good Old-Timers. Tells you what they were doing the first 4 years. You know, when they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, read the specifics of what the path it was they took during the first 4 years, because I can promise you they didn't read the big book. I'm not putting down the big book. I've memorized the big book. I teach the big book. I believe in the big book. I believe generally in what the big book says and everything like that, but the big book doesn't necessarily deal with the specifics of what they actually did. You read Dr. Bob. It's conference approved. Read Dr. Bob and the Good Old-Timers, and then after you read that, you look at AA, what you know about AA today, and you see how much of that is actually going on. And I think you're going to be in for some surprise. Like, you're going to be in the surprise of thinking, you probably think that religion is bad. You know, in AA, apparently, if you believe, you can either believe in the big book or what really the truth is. You can believe in something called the wisdom of the rooms. And let me tell you something about AA. This is a wonderful organization. I love you guys, but it ain't Well People's Anonymous. And the wisdom of the rooms is often what the loudest guy in Alcoholics Anonymous with the least sobriety is going to say or something. What makes people uncomfortable. That's, you know, you want to know something? You want to know something? The truth makes people uncomfortable. The truth will make you uncomfortable. And when if you're going to start talking about the truth of your life and the truth of what's going on, be prepared to have AA detractors. Be prepared to have people jumping all over you. The truth will make you uncomfortable. You didn't get here in this room picking up white chips because things were all that comfortable. You know, the truth will make it, will make things uncomfortable. And the bottom line is that, you know, there was clergy all through this thing. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman. Does anybody know who the clergyman was? It was a Jesuit priest named Ed Dowling. Who was Bill Wilson? So you want to know who his real sponsor was? It was Ed Dowling and Sam Shoesmaker, who was, you know, was one of the co-founders of the Oxford Movement, which is an evangelical Christian movement. He was a member of Calvary Church in New York. You know, you want to know what this thing is all about? Be Dr. Brown, Bob, and the good old timers. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without any reservations, whatever, has indeed come a long way spiritually. And then it says, and is entitled to be called a man. You know what the test is? You know how you determine, according to our literature, whether somebody's willing to a man instead of a boy? You won't hear this in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. What I'm about to read you is straight out of the book, but you won't hear it in AA meetings because you'll hear about the wisdom of the rooms. You'll hear people saying, I'm spiritual, not religious. I'm spirit. Well, let me tell you something. I've been sober for 32 years. I think to good purpose. I try to do the best I can, and I'm anything but spiritual. I'm a carnal individual who's selfish and self-centered to the extreme. I've lived myself long enough. I know exactly what I am. I am selfish. I am self-centered. I am mean-spirited. I am somebody who thinks about who would probably prefer to think about himself than other people. And I can promise you, if you take me away from these rooms, working this thing, doing this stuff, focusing on God, the God of my understanding, you're going to see exactly what I am, and you're not going to like me. And anything you see in me that is attractive to you or you want has nothing to do with me. Believe me, has nothing to do with me. Has to do with my Creator and His Spirit in me, a reflection of Him in me that's coming out through my personality. Because if you were dealing with me, you wouldn't like me. Trust me. I know me well enough to know who I am. I'm not spiritual. If I was spiritual, I wouldn't be here. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all his faults without any reservations whatever has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled, this is the test, is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his Creator. Are you trying to grow in the image and likeness of your Creator? Sounds a little religious, right? Well, because that's what AA is religious. Who told you it wasn't religious? You need to read Dr. Bob and the good old timers. That's why we say, you know, I don't know if you know this. You know what sober people do? You ready for this? They lose all prejudice, even against organized religions. They begin to see where religious people are right. That's what sober people do. When you hear somebody in the back start putting down the Catholic Church, and putting down the Protestant Church, and putting down religious people, say we don't talk about it and all that sort of stuff, you know why they say that? Because they're not sober. Because they got a chip on their shoulder. Because they got a resentment of some kind against religious people. And you know what resentments are? They're the number one killers. But you see, most people in AA think that's the gospel when it's the exact opposite of Alcoholics Anonymous, which actually endorses church membership. Because what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is as we form a relationship with God, we become more and more open-minded, and we want to hang out with people that are always talking about God. We want to worship God. We want to focus on God. And that's why we get to the 11th step, where it finally says, once we have this relationship, we try to get closer and closer. And that's why it says in the family afterwards, it says, we recommend church membership, church, synagogue, whatever it is, membership, where you can hang around congregations, you get with people. That's the number one thing. That's what they want to do. It says it right in the book. It says most of us favor such relationships. You wouldn't know that if you just hung around the rooms and didn't really read the book and get into the stuff, because you would get all your information from a bunch of alcoholics that meet and whine about their problems and, you know, what's going on in their lives and, you know, basically three-year-olds that are sucking their thumb and gathering together to try to pat themselves on the back and tell themselves they're doing well because they're picking up medallions, where most of them are going to drink anyway, because only 1.5% make it past 20 years, and I know a lot of guys make it past 20 years and they got their head up their ass. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know it because they don't tell you the truth of what's going on. No, every once in a while I sponsor them and I learn what's going on. They're living lives of quiet desperation. So you got to decide what you want out of this thing. The guy in the glass. when you get what you want and you struggle for pelf and the world makes you king for a day. Pelf, you know what pelf is? P-E-L-F. Old English word, it means stuff. We're going to talk more about this in the seventh step. You're going to like the seventh step. You got to stick around for the seventh step. That's where I get serious. Seventh step is where I get serious. We're going to get serious. You know, where you get humble, you know, that's where you get the... I was going to do my speech on humility, but I usually don't do it with a group this small. But okay. When you get what you want and you struggle for pelf, things, stuff, you know the stuff, you know it says we're alcoholics, you cannot manage your own life? You know, we said that, right? You're alcoholic, you cannot manage your own life. No human power could be like, only God couldn't if he was sought. And then it says underneath that, being convinced we're ready for stuff, being convinced of that. Then we leave the A room, get in our car, and we think about, okay, now how am I going to manage my life? What am I going to do about this? Then we start doing it again, right? It's like, you know, hey, listen, you can get rid of the drinking. What do you do about the thinking? What are you about to do about the old ideas? What are you going to do about the fact that you're hair triggered to be like right-handed to think alcoholically because you feel comfortable thinking alcoholically and you don't even know it's alcoholic the way you think because it's just the way you think and that's the way you've always think and you think just the way you drink over and over again, the same thoughts, the same way, and it leads to toxic waste and disaster and you don't even know you're doing it while you're doing it. What are you going to do about when you get in your car and you start thinking the same crap you've been thinking about the same people you've been thinking about and about your life and the same things, none of which makes you feel good, all of which makes you feel bad? What are you going to do with that stuff when you don't even know that stuff is bad because you just think it's okay because this is just the way you are? Why do you think the thoughts you think? Do you realize that the thoughts you think are what make you feel bad? Okay, so then you say to me what a lot of people say to me once they finally realize that's true, that they're crazy because of their brain. And I'm looking at you guys, you appear to have only one brain. You don't have a spare brain, so it's your brain. I know what you try to do. You try to fix your brain with your brain. It doesn't really work well, does it? It doesn't work well. How many years do you have to, you know, stay in A before you realize that your brain is the real problem, and you only got one of them? So you link up with a sponsor who has a brain, and then, but that's not going to work unless you listen to your sponsor's brain. You know what I mean? If you don't listen to your sponsor's brain, it's not going to work, because you're going to judge what he tells you with what? Your brain. Bad deal. Ain't going to work. You're going to say, I don't like that, I like this. Forget it. Just give up the ghost and surrender. So when you get what you like, what you want, and you struggle for pelf, and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say, or gal. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back in the glass. He's the feller to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. I used to watch guys that would do stuff like the stuff I'm doing now. I used to be amazed at people that used to do this because I would be so scared and so self-conscious. You know what I mean? I'd say, how does somebody live their life and be so comfortable in their skin where they don't even, you know, it allows you to talk fast too because you don't have to run through the filter, what do they think about me? You know what it's like to base your life? You know what the new freedom feels like? The new freedom and the new happiness? You know when they talk about being rocked in the fourth dimension of existence, experiencing much of heaven? You know when they say that stuff, they're not talking about just not drinking. I know a lot of people that don't drink and they're not rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. They're not experiencing much of heaven. They're not experiencing the new freedom and the new happiness. Why would anybody go through all this crap and pay the dollar you throw into the basket if you're not going for the new freedom and the new happiness? You know what it feels like? You know what it feels like being? It feels like freedom. Freedom from fear. Freedom from the judgment of people. You know, freedom from the judgment and the condemnation of yourself. Why would anybody want to live their life on the planet and not be free of all that stuff? I mean, drinking is beside the point. You're not going to drink because there's no reason to drink. Because why would you drink when you know you're just you're excited to be alive and you love the Lord? Why would that happen? You know, why are you hanging on? Why are you hanging on to this horse shit that you hang on to? These old ideas. I mean, how many years? 10, 20, 30, 40 years you have to hang on to the crap you hang on because you're worried about some gork in the front row and what he thinks about you? And what AA will think about you? It's pathetic. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass thinks you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and tears if you cheated the guy in the glass. I don't want you to cheat yourself out of this deal. This deal is unbelievable. You know, it says if you want, we have, and you're ready to go to ALA together, then you're ready to take certain steps. And I've run into guys in this fellowship, and you're going to run into them too, that have something more than just not drinking. You know, one of the stories I like to read, and it's really illustrative, and of a lot of the stories is the story he sold himself short. I read it all the time. I'm sure I've read it here before, and I'm just going to read just a section of it for a second, if I can find it. You know, this is what happens. Only been doing this for... Okay. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years to the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am, and over my AA years I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. Have you heard anything about money yet? Have you heard anything about his job? Have you heard anything about cars or sex or anything like that? I'm talking about the stuff that you think of 90% of the time. Have you heard anything about the stuff you think of or hear about in AA all the time? No, you haven't. Because people aren't talking about this stuff. They're talking about their old ideas. Their old thoughts. They're talking about, you know what they're talking about? They're speaking alcoholism in here while staying sober. They're not talking about this stuff. They're talking about booze, alcoholism, things, stuff, people. You know, in the back of the book it says that nobody say you need your wife or your husband or any of that stuff in order to stay sober. It's always based on your relationship with God. No matter job or no job, wife or no wife. It all depends upon, you know, this whole book is designed, the whole thing is set to focus you on God and build that relationship with God and only crowd your life out with Him. He's not talking about material things. Oh, here it comes. Here comes the material things. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. Okay, that's his talk on material things. I don't have crap. That's what he says about his material life. You know what he says? He says, I don't have stuff. I don't have a lot of stuff. But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, you know when I see things like above all, I think that's probably important. Just like the great fact is this and nothing less. What I think that means is the great fact is this and nothing less. You know what I mean? Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. Well, I think we ought to pay attention to this. They have it in the book. The love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. And you won't hear about that stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings because we're spiritual, not religious, because it has nothing to do with God. It has to do that we become so wonderful, and we're such great people, much better than those church people, you know, and those religious people, and those priests. We become so great and so spiritual that why need God when you're wonderful like we are? That's just our character. Did you know in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're just wonderful people. You know, anything staying sober, it has nothing to do with God. Forget these steps. It has nothing to do with God. And then you go on down to here, down to this thing right here, where it says, right here, it says, we have experienced, found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences, which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, towards God's universe, the central fact of our lives today. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. There they use that word Creator again, just like in the sixth step, that He's willing to grow in the image and likeness of His Creator. whoever he is, I guess he might be important. It says, seated with a relationship with him is writing, great events will come to pass. He must be talking about somebody. It says, he has commenced to accomplish those things for us, which we could never do by ourselves. The creator, the guy who we're supposed to turn to in our image and our likeness. You know, the guy that the step, what does it say, the promises? He is doing for us. They'll always appear if we work for it. He's doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. And so what is that sixth step about? You know, there's a sign on all the walls in any rooms. It says, first things first. Anybody ever see that sign? You know where it comes from? It says it comes from Dr. Bob, the good old Dr. Bob made that thing up, you know, where it says first things first. It comes from the Bible. It says, comes about, seek ye first, you know, God and his righteousness, and all things will be added unto you. Just focus on him. That's what this book says. It's all a paraphrase. Just focus, it says, see to what your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you because of the son of this. You know what the word righteous means? Look it up in the dictionary. Righteous means right standing before God. You know who God is? God's the guy that has all power that you're supposed to find now. So the men are the men who somehow, after 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, give up all the crap that we hear about and start focusing on him. And then unbelievable things happen. You think physical sobriety is something? You think you're having fun going to AA meetings and all the AA dances and all that stuff? Wait till you start seriously focusing on him. But you want some, only a few people are going to do it. Don't think that everybody in AA is going to do it. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of people in AA are going to drag you away from it. I know you don't believe that, but there are. They're going to say that stupid stuff, or don't listen to that. Put the plug in the jug. It's just about not drinking. Don't listen to that guy. There are going to be people in this room that are going to tell you it's stupid stuff to do. But that's okay. Some people are going to do it. It's not because you're not going to hear the message. It's not because the message isn't obvious, isn't clear, isn't written in the book. It's going to be because you're scared of doing it. Those are the guys that Dr. Bob said, I feel sorry for him. The Heavenly Father will never let him down. That's the stuff, you know. I did a meeting. I'm just going to close it up, you know, in a second. I did a meeting. Listen, I know some of the stuff I say is controversial. I don't know why it's controversial. It's right out of the book. You know, I'll have people come up to me after I read the book, and they'll say, when you said that, it really helped me. I said, well, you mean what I read from the book? He said, yeah, but it's the way you read it. You mean I read it in such a way so that you can't ignore it, that you've heard it for the first time, instead of skipping over it. And I had a gal come up to me, she's about 10 years, and she said to me, and I didn't do anything different than I'm doing here tonight. She says, I've never heard anything like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never heard anything like that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, why? And you got to ask yourself, why is that? It's tough stuff, right? It's hard doctrine. It's not your loosey-goosey sort of like, you know, psychological, you don't have to work real hard on that deal. You know, you just sort of go out and, you know. It's like we're like Richard Simmons in here, you know. Just do a couple of push-ups and, you know, go to a meeting, don't drink, and go to meetings and go into La La Land and everything's going to be okay. This is sort of like a little bit too Taliban for you guys, right? This is serious stuff. You get what you put into this thing. You know, you get what you pay for. You get what you put in, garbage out. You put in the serious stuff. You focus on him. He's the central factor of your lives. That means you think about him. Your life changes. Your thinking changes. Amazing things happen. You draw amazing people to you. You draw amazing things in life to you. You don't do this, life will overwhelm your ass. Well, believe me, life is powerful. It's powerful out there. The forces are powerful. You're going to go out there. You look at the billboards. You look at Bloomingdale's, you look at Macy's, you look at TV, it's all about buy this, do this, get that, you're insufficient, have this. You ain't going to make it. You ain't going to make it. We got 60 and 70-year-old guys that are convinced that their only problem is Viagra. You know, if they only had more sex so they can get a hard-on for, you know, 4 hours, you know what I mean? They're convinced that's the answer to their problem. They're leaving their wives of 30 years, you know what I mean? Because that's what their whole life is about. It's pathetic. And if you don't think that's part and parcel of alcoholism, you don't understand what alcoholism is all about. Don't be shocked when you hear a guy with 15 years or 20 years or, you know, 12 years or a gal goes out and drinks or doesn't go to meetings anymore or stuff like that and what's going on, because they are not focused on the important stuff. They're doing this thing like we do jail time, just go another meeting, another deal, and I'm not saying none of this stuff is important, but unless you sort of I can't stay sober at 32 years. based upon the focus I had and the things I was thinking about and my relationship with God when I had that, what I had at 3 years. In other words, I've got to grow up, not only you know, age-wise, but emotionally and spiritually. You know, and that's one of the things, and I understand, and I'm just going to end it this way, I get the fact it has nothing to do with the intellect. I get the fact that we got to go through I get the fact that we balk at all this stuff, that the old ideas are given up over a period of 5, 10, 15 years. I mean, the truth of the matter is, in my life, things didn't start getting better, you know, from, when I say better, incredible, what I would call incredible, a different deal, you know, the next frontier until past 20 years. You know, I'll jokingly, but I'm not joking, so I'll say to a guy, I say, just hang around us and listen to how we think and how we talk, and in 15 years you'll start feeling better. You know what I mean? And, listen, if we didn't feel better about coming here, no matter, even if we had 3 months, we wouldn't be here. We do feel better. But well, you know what alcoholics, aren't we impatient? Don't we want to come in here and go to one meeting or hear one thing and then all of a sudden be wonderful? You don't want to hear me say, don't worry, let me tell you something. You're going to get this thing. Everything's going to be fine. You're going to feel fantastic. It's just going to take 20 years. You don't want to hear that. Even if you suspect it's the truth, just don't tell you that, right? You don't want to hear that, okay? But you know something? You're going to be 20 years somewhere. You're going to be somewhere for 20 years, right? So you might as well be here, and you might as well get on this thing and do it right, you know? I was constantly hanging around with people that had 20, 30 years, and I had 3 months, and I wondered what they had tomorrow. It doesn't work that way, does it? You know what I mean? So it's about, and the more you become focused on Him, the more you start trying to find out what He wants you to do and where He wants you to be. And you know what it says? This is the end. It says He will give us, this is right out of the book, He says, when we're sincere about this position, God will give us everything we need, being all powerful, if we stay close to Him and perform His work well. And if you don't understand that, and if you don't agree with that, and you don't like that, it's not because, I don't take it personally, it has nothing to do with me, because that's a quote right out of the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous. That just means that you don't agree with this program. And you don't like this program, and you'd want to do it your way. And I appreciate that, because alcoholics are defiant. And no matter what I read, they're going to try to figure out how it doesn't really apply to them, or they're different. They're going to make that chocolate cake, and they're just not going to use the chocolate. And I get that, okay? I understand that. You need to do that for a few years and see how that works. So God bless you. Thank you very much.